My chapter looks at southern-led responses to displacement, but also starts its genesis with reference to Cuba and education in many regards. So my chapter is primarily focused on looking at responses to displacement in the context of the Middle East, but it does so through a relational and trans-regional approach as well. So part of the reason that I've been interested in southern-led responses to displacement is not only the abstract recognition that most refugees and most internally displaced people around the world are in the so-called global south, but also that most responses to refugees and internally displaced people takes place within the global south, by neighbouring countries, by other countries which exist on the same continent, but also trans-regionally. So my interest and my connection to Cuba is that when I was conducting research in the Sahrawi refugee camps in southwest Algeria, I was immediately struck by the number of Cuban-educated refugees who were there. And my doctoral research took place in the Sahrawi refugee camps, as well as in Syria, South Africa, and Spain, where refugees have studied, but also primarily in Cuba. And my interest was in exploring the experiences of children and youth in this transnational education program, but also understanding the rationale for that connection and the broader implications of this. Now, this led to a parallel comparative study, which was also looking not just at Sahrawi experiences in La Habana and other cities in Cuba, but also Palestinian refugees who had, like Sahrawis, received full scholarships to complete their primary, secondary, and or tertiary level educations in Cuba in a mode of relationship which wasn't country to country, because both the Sahrawi and the Palestinian refugee students were receiving scholarships through their respective liberation movement representatives and political representatives. So this for me was one of the foundational interests in this topic, moving away from the emphasis that often exists and certainly in political rhetoric and in media representations of northern-led responses, whether it's UN missions which are funded by countries from the global north or international organisations with headquarters in European and North American capitals, to think about the different ways in which actors from across the so-called global south respond, whether they are states such as Cuba or Malaysia or Indonesia, providing scholarship programmes, financial resources, political support, etc., or indeed local level responses. And one of the interesting elements that I find existing within a lot of the South-South cooperation literature is this emphasis on state-to-state cooperation and losing the multi-scalar forms of connection and interrelationality that exists in this mode of solidarity and support, which is often contradictory and conflictual in nature, of course. So in my chapter, with that in mind, my chapter I set out some historical examples and the history of southern-led responses to displacement, addresses some of the reasons why this emphasis on southern-led responses to conflict and displacement has been invisible in a lot of the academic and policy-related literature, in part to do with this principle of non-interference, which is one of the key principles of South-South cooperation, and the way in which responding to literacy or responding to a flood is different from interfering in responding to people who have been displaced by conflict, by social injustice, by human rights violations, in which state-to-state relations would potentially be seen as problematic. So although there is a long history of southern states and of southern actors responding to refugees and to internally displaced people, there is much less literature on that and much less recognition of it, because it's politically more sensitive and politically potentially more problematic for states to announce their roles in these responses and to think through those implications. So in the chapter, I think about situating the different responses that have taken place across time and across different regions, comparing, for example, the response to the Haitian earthquake in 2010 with responses to the Syrian refugee crisis, which is a case that Estella and I are exploring at the moment through the European Research Council funded project, but also situating that with my earlier case study on Sahrawi and Palestinian refugees. Now, when doing this, of course, we're reifying the term South and implicitly comparing it with the global North. So what I explicitly say in my chapter is that I'm not re-engaging with the much longer standing debates and contestation on critiques of the global North-run humanitarian infrastructure. So the purpose of the chapter is not to re-engage with a critique of Northern humanitarianism, but actually to try and set that aside and think about, well, let's not constantly return to the notion of the North as being the dominant hegemonic frame of reference, but think about the diversity of ways in which actors from around the world have responded to displacement. Now, I keep on coming back to actually reifying in that process, and reifying both the term the North and the South in ways that our interlocutors, as Estella will also attest, our interlocutors on the ground will find problematic. So a Lebanese interlocutor feeling quite offended by being, or a Jordanian representative feeling offended at being labelled South. So why are you coming and looking for us and labelling us as South to begin with? So part of the challenge is recognising that historical and contemporary diversity of response, but finding the right terminology to do so in a way that we can explain through reference to theoretical frameworks and the longer history of political struggle, liberation movements, etc., but that might not resonate as terminology with our interlocutors, and overcoming or addressing with that that tension, I think, is something that we're certainly continuing to explore in our project. So another issue that I discuss in the chapter is this instrumentalization of Southern actors. And again, one of the points of tension in recognizing the roles that Southern actors are playing in responses to displacement is the potential for Northern actors, the UN, the international organizations, having a get out of jail free card, which is to say that there's increasing attention to the so-called localization of aid agenda, by which the UN and donor states are committing to providing more financial resources directly to states and regions which are affected by conflict and displacement. But in so doing, keeping the so-called burden within the South, and also giving up their own responsibility to respond in meaningful manners, which challenge the structural inequalities that have created conflict and displacement to begin with. So part of the challenge with exploring these Southern responses is doing so in a way that does not give information, as it were, to the UN or donor states that could be used to say, oh, but look, there are so many local responses already taking place, there is no need for us to be here. Or alternatively to say, well, I can simply channel my resources to this local or national organisation and I can step back and have no responsibility for this. Now, again, we come to the challenge, well, actually, maybe that is what we need. We do actually need the North to step out. But there is that historical legacy, there is that historical responsibility, there are the arms sales, which are the cause of so many of these conflicts that still need to be redressed. So there needs to be a stepping back without reneging on those responsibilities, more broadly speaking. So there's this concern around the instrumentalization of actors from the Global South, in conjunction with wanting to recognise the heterogeneity and the long-standing nature of responses, and ensuring that we aren't writing out the other from the history of humanitarianism, but that by writing people in, we aren't subsequently reinscribing the term South as the dominant one which has to be used, or pushing responsibilities from one side to the other. The final issue that I discuss is the importance of geographies and scales of response, and going beyond that focus on the state to think about transnational collections on different scales, whether it's through different NGOs, different faith movements, between refugees across different different regions around the world, and thinking about what happens if we think about South-South cooperation as a set of principles which go beyond the unit of analysis, beyond the state, but to think about, well, what is the significance of solidarity, of cooperation, when viewed from the level of a neighbourhood or from the level of a family cooperating and entering into solidarity based relationships with other displaced people, and to think about refugee-led responses potentially through that lens of cooperation and solidarity, rather than naturalising responses as being neighbourly or because of common backgrounds and common identifiers. What is it to think about some of these principles through the frames of solidarity and political allegiances or connections, and a challenge to structural inequality? What work could that do for us? So ultimately, the chapter is trying to trace different ways of imagining and implementing responses to conflict-induced displacement, and to think about how that is situated within the broader frames of humanitarian response, which is then discussed in Estella's chapter in the volume as well.